Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, family. What's the word? That's another week. Slow week, fast week. Most of us, it's a slow week. As the coronavirus continues to take over what has become, what was our normal way of living and our normal way of life. But we still here. We still kicking in the atmosphere. And as long as we are above ground, we're still doing it. So welcome to this Saturday. I'm pumped. For a number of reasons, full disclosure, we did some radio magic for the end of the show. We had two folks that we've been trying to get on for quite some time. However, they were not able to get with us on Saturday, today. So we actually pre-recorded with them, and we're going to put that in and drop that in at the end of the show. Now, this is either going to go great, and I'm going to come across with Rashi looking like mad geniuses, or this is going to be some shitty ass shit, and it's going to be like, damn, son, what was you thinking? Nah, everything should go fine, and if not, then I'll just drop it as a secondary show, and we'll just leave it as that, because it's already done and prepped, and I'll just change a couple of things and make that public. But what we did yesterday was interviewed my homegirl, Margaret. She's a mortician in New York City. Her business is in Brooklyn. BK stand up! So she came on and talked about the challenges that she's facing right now, being a mortician in New York City. And then my man, I met a podiatrist down in New Orleans a couple of months back. December, I want to say, and I was dying to get him on for the longest time, but he actually gigs down there as well. He does Uber and Lyft and all that type jazz. Look, long story. We'll go into his personal life next time we have him on the show. But I wanted him on to talk about that culture and how much that's changed, but also his practice for podiatry and how he's going to address dealing with patients once this thing is over, right? And let's be clear, will it ever be over? Don't know, doubt it. I don't think folks will be trusting fully for quite some time, and that's okay. You know, it's definitely understandable, especially as we continue to speak on or hear that there's going to be a second outbreak when the weather cools down. And so that adds to people's uncertainty and people's panic. And again, totally understandable when you're seeing nothing but death running around, but surrounding you on the news, if not in person. That's huge, man. You know, shout out to the Nola family just in general, man. Folks are dropping like one after another after another. Shout out to my man Deron, who is a friend of the show. He's been on the show before. He knows 8 people of 10 that just passed away. 8 of them are family members. 8 family members have passed away within days of one another. Who is ready for that? You know what I'm saying? Like, one of the things that we talked about with Margaret yesterday was the fact that her business is booming, but that's not a good thing for a number of reasons. First off, that's a whole lot of people dying. Secondly, the capacity just isn't there to handle that magnitude of death in such a short span. So it's a lot, man, and I've been saying that over the past couple of weeks, and that's okay. We'll continue to say that because it's a lot, and we'll continue to pack a lot in. I got confirmation from Doc. She'll be on next week, and we'll talk about the mental health of this whole situation, because a lot of people, and I'm raising my hand for those who cannot see me, are going through cabin fever right now. And if you haven't, tell me what you're doing so we can have that conversation, because this shit ain't cool at all. I was just talking to my sister before we came up live, and she was and she is very much a loner, you know. So I was like, yo, how you dealing with this? And she was like, yo, you know, it's one thing when you doing it to yourself, for yourself, by yourself. It's another thing when the motherfucker telling you you can't go outside. Like, you know, Rashi, good morning. Remember, like, when you were bad, something was bad, and your parents was like, yo, you can't go outside. Yo, you know how, like, your whole self just crumbled?
I'll take the ass whipping.
What?
Well, Lee, guess what? You ask how you do it, and I'm finna tell you how you do it, because I am an indoor person. I've been indoors now for more than, definitely since I've been raising children. I used to be outdoorsy a little bit in my early 20s, but since I started breeding, I'm in the house doing something. Mm. And so not only that, you talking about being grounded. That wasn't how I got grounded. People would have to take my books. I'm a reader. And so my book collection started when I was 9 or 10 years old, and it's more than 30,000 books strong now. So you don't punish me by making me stay inside. I'm a reader and a watcher. So I think I've exhausted Netflix.
Really?
I even watched all the Scandinavian and Spanish shows already.
Okay. Yeah,
my next genre is the Koreans. They the only one I've watched, and I done started already watching their shows.
Yo, let me tell you something, though. Real talk, speaking of television and shows and all that, well, I've been stuck on Star Trek, and I'm still stuck on Star Trek. I'm watching Enterprise. and I'm on season 4, so that's almost over. Then I'll go to – I don't need to watch The Next Generation because I've seen all of those, I'm pretty sure. One of the issues that I have about television shows is I was in the military in the early 90s to almost the end of the decade. So when you're deployed overseas and stuff like that, you can miss a lot of stuff. You know, television shows, if they don't work, they're only on for a season. Well, a season is just a couple of months, right? So I was overseas for a couple of years. There's a lot of shit that I missed. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, there are things that people talk about, and I have music, TV, movies, and I'm like, yo, I have no idea what the hell you're talking about. Because if it came out between 92 and pretty much 99, yeah, I was out of the loop, fam. And that's real talk.
The new question,
like,
the real question, Lee, the real question, Lee, is going to be, how are we going, like you talked about earlier, the trust factor, how are we going to start trusting one another again when it's time to go back outside? Because for people like me with I'll be willing to admit mild stage agoraphobia. If when it's time for us to go back out there, now we got a whole nother reason why we don't want to go. Y'all sick. You know what I'm saying? The world out there is sick. So we got some major psychological work that we have to do. Both those who are being trapped in, who feel they need to be out, and those who are in comfortably, you know, now having a somewhat justifiable reason why they should not go out when going out is a part of their mental health therapy. You know, it's a lot of work out there that's going to have to be done in order to get us back to our new normal. But our new normal is, to me, smarter. Like, okay, fine, let's recalibrate, because all that swapping of all that handshaking and random mouth touching and all that. Nothing like a good old pandemic.
I draw the line.
To get you back, keeping yourself to yourself. I mean, there's something to it. Instead of copiously sharing all your fluids, why don't you try to think about keeping yourself to yourself?
Let me tell you something right here, right now. First and foremost, let me start this by some random shit. I apologize to any woman who's ever had the displeasure of sleeping beside me when I have not utilized my CPAP, because I woke myself up this morning snoring. That shit wasn't cool for me.
No, you woke yourself up.
I apologize to any woman.
No, you didn't wake yourself up snoring, Lee. You died. You died and you came back. That's what that is.
Maybe.
They tell you when you go to the sleep clinic and get that CPAP, they tell you when you go without breathing for blah, 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 that's your brain kickstarting you back alive because it didn't mean to kill itself.
Maybe, but let me tell you something. That shit was loud as hell. I was like, God damn, I'm that fucking loud? So, I apologize to all the women that I slept with before. And sleeping with does not mean sexual contact, people. Let's get over that. We're grown. We don't have to fuck everybody we sleep with. But, so that's the random piece. Second piece on top of that is I'm trying to get some cookie until the cookie get got, and that's a comedian that I started following. That's his catchphrase. I get the cookie until the cookie get got. He's actually a pretty funny dude, man. He seems to be real cool. I might reach out to him directly and see if he can come on the show. But now that I'm thinking about it, that's some other random shit. But this being single and quarantine, we will definitely go into this more next week, maybe even the week after, because this is something that Jackie needs to be on about without a doubt. So let me reach out to her to bring her up as well. But we'll go through the psychological aspect of it there next week. But yeah, somebody's daughter gonna be in some real motherfucking trouble when this shit over with. Like,
well, I hope she got
a
list for you.
Before.
She need to have a list.
I done said
it
before.
Do you have herpes?
I done said.
Do you have the virus? HIV virus. Do you have Corona Man virus? Have you had the Corona Man virus? Do you have
Why
cancer?
Why do you call it corona?
Do you have...
Look, I am more than willing to take a Clorox bath. I come with the horses, Trojan man. I come with the horses. That's a prince. That's a prince. That's a nod to Prince right there. But yeah, I come with the horses. So look, we about to get in. Like somebody about to.
First
get
of all,
I don't know
if
who
you
it
have
is.
Sex, if you have sex with a girl who has the Corona man, and you don't get the Corona man, you wasn't doing shit. Okay. Your sex is so lame that I might as well have that.
Hold on. So you're saying the measure of good sex.
Baby, if you did not contract something,
if you
did not do it right, okay?
If you don't come out Corona positive, you didn't hit it right. You want some bullshit, you need to take that whack ass shit and keep.
Well, damn, look what they doing in order not to get it. They got on full astronaut spacesuits not to get the Corona man. So you mean to tell me you was being intimate
this
and
sister,
didn't get the Corona man?
This sister sent me a porno. She forwarded the shit to me. The guy was wearing a mask. The girl was wearing a mask. And they were straight getting it, right? So the guy started fucking with the girl, and he started coughing. She was like, yo, don't play. Don't play with me. Hold on. This dude is running up in you like you are a spin-around door, but you going to pause it because he coughed? Like, really? That should be the last thing you worried about right now. Are you serious right now? Really? That's the first thing you worried about? Yeah, okay. Yeah, I don't get it. But yo, that's funny as shit. So he said, if you don't come back Corona positive, you didn't hit that shit. Yo, that's some crazy shit. That's some crazy shit. But you know, a lot of women don't like to kiss nowadays, though.
Hey, I mean, they finna not want to do a whole lot of stuff. It used to be kiss. Okay, now you can't hold his hand. You know what I'm saying? You can't hold his hand. He can't, you know. Y'all can't be all that necking and stuff. You don't know what? And see, I used to always think like that since I heard about, incurable viruses. There is no cure for the virus. There is no cure for any virus ever. There's no cure for the rhinovirus for your nose when you get a cold. There's no cure for influenza. There's no cure. There's treatment. There's no cure. So every time you get a virus, you have it for the rest of your life. Every virus you have ever gotten, from herpes, simplex 1 and 2, any virus you have ever gotten, you will die with. We got to quit playing with each other.
That's real.
Quit playing with each other. Quit playing with each other. You know, and when you get ready to touch a human body, it's got to be right. It's got to be true. Because if not, you run the risk of killing somebody if you the one, or getting killed. You know, the slow death if you ain't the one.
Rashi.
I think we need to be real about
it. I'm not going to allow you. Okay, but I'm not going to allow you to fuck up my potential for getting some pussy later on. Like, what you do or don't do is your thing, but we ain't going down this road right now because eventually
what's wrong with
somebody's daughter going to have to get it.
What's wrong with discipline and discretion?
There's nothing wrong with discipline nor discretion. Nothing whatsoever. I was disciplined and discretion for 15 months I was in Korea. Please understand and believe it. I am no longer in Korea. It's about to be on and popping. I'm just letting you know. It's not a game. Not a game at all. Look, somebody got to get it. With all this backed up, pent up, is got to go somewhere. You want me to start kicking the dog?
No, I want you to practice yoga. I want you to learn to play the guitar. I want you to.
I'm gonna play some strings.
I want
I'm
you
a fucking
to.
Shrimp.
I want you to begin your
I'm
workout.
A,
oh,
I'm a Titan and real. That's a workout regimen.
Walk 2 miles a day. I want you to begin writing your memoirs. I want you
mm-hmm.
to learn a
mm-hmm.
new craft that you can work, you know, your mind
mm-hmm.
with. I want you to mm-hmm. replace treating another human's body as a release tool for your personal frustration. But
it's not personal. It's mutual. It's mutual. It's mutual.
Is it, though?
It's a mutual exchange of energy. I give, you take. You give, I take. Because if your ass is laying there, we got a problem. If you ain't throwing it back, you ain't fucking me. We can't do that. That's a waste of energy.
I know.
If you ain't popping that thing, you know, bagging it up like, nah, I don't want it. Like, shit, you know, nah, dog. I mean, hell, I could have watched porn for that. I could have done that myself. Ain't we
I've always
in?
Been a fairly conservative person, Noli. I've always, in fact, I want to say a history, a family history of inappropriate touch has kept the women in my family hyper-vigilant about, excuse me, what is and is not okay, you know, and what young ladies should and should not be on. And we fight it. The women in this family who want their independence, who want to be able to be out whenever, who want to have more than one gentleman friend. We fight. They fight, or we fight. I'm going to have to say they because I never really did that. They fight against the idea that in this family, we believe that if you want to stay safe, you got to keep yourself, you got to keep it tight. You know, you got to be where you're supposed to be. You got to be in at a certain time. You have to be dressed a certain way. And you have to keep your mind and your body a certain way so that you don't fall victim to, you know, somebody else's decision of what they want to do with your body. And so because of that, you know, even, you know, I've had white gentlemen approach me, and I have to tell them, listen, you know, white people have been able to say and do whatever they want to a human, black human, for too many centuries. And I need you to consider me one black human that you do not get to dictate, you know,
literally.
Or rile. You cannot tell me when, you know, you cannot woo me. You can kill me if you have to, but that's it. You know, you won't make me behave any way that I don't want to behave. This is the one black human you're going to meet that way. And so, that kind of extends to, you know what it is, Lee? You remember when I told you I don't have male reverence? I didn't grow up with a father in the household, so I don't believe that men are right, you know? Like, oh, girl, go get that man and ask. Go get that man, ask him to help us. I don't say that. Oh, let's wait and ask the man of the family what he think. I never thought about it like that. I've been married now. You hear me? I still don't think about it like that. I didn't then. I definitely, you know, tell him, well, this is what's going to need to happen. Are you in or are you out? But I don't believe that men inherently know what to do. So I don't believe they inherently should decide what to do with me.
Gotcha.
I want to ask you a question again. Let me tell you something that happened to me yesterday, and it shocked me. He had to be all of 70 years old, maybe 75 plus. I'm going to say 75-year-old man came out of a store, and he was like, how you doing, Mr. How you doing? You got a man? And I said, hello, elder. How are you? And he said, what you call me? I said, you my elder and soon to be my ancestor. What are you doing out here? And he got offended. Now, what made him think it was okay to talk to me like that? And then he get mad to my, why would I talk to him like that?
Him like that. Ego, going back to what you said, the reverence, you know, his thoughts and beliefs are he should have that right to speak to you in that manner, and you should not retort to him as you responded to him. So that's what gave him that inclination. That's what gave him that belief. That's what made him think and feel that was going to go down that way. But you flipped the script on him, and he didn't know how to deal with it. Hence, he took offense. That's why.
I mean, what was his best case scenario? Oh, Daddy, I've been waiting for a man like you. Where you been all this time?
Yep, that was it.
And then what? I go and break his fucking hip. I do snoo snoo on. You don't even know what snoo snoo is. I go and break his hip in the moment of
obviously he was obviously he was willing to take that risk. So if it went down like that, then yes.
Snoo snoo occurs when a very strong woman approaches a very small frail man and rides his pelvis until she crushes the bones like powder, and he dies in the moment of orgasm fucking with somebody he ain't got no business touching. Snoo snoo.
Okay. But again, obviously he was willing to risk his life and limb and well-being in order to test his skills. Maybe he thought he had a couple more marathons left in him. You know, you never know. I know guys that are older that love younger women. That's not a new phenomenon at all.
Love to
the degree
look at naked young women. Love to pay in some way or form or fashion. For the privilege
we all
of
pay
being to look at a
We all pay for sex in some form of it. Be it the gas to get there, the bus fare to get there, the food, the movie, the time, the condoms, whatever. The hotel room maybe, the insurance on the car if you're getting it in the car. The car payment, we all pay for sex. That's people need to get off of that shit, because, yeah, everybody paying for it in some form or fashion, to some degree, you know? But that's neither here nor there. Yeah, but I'm in Carolina. This job I had a couple of years ago, I'm in Carolina, and this older brother, he was in this late 50s, 60s. And I'm not saying he was ancient. I'm just saying he was older. We were standing around having a conversation. He was talking about a young lady that he had met in the grocery store. And I was like, what was that all about? You know, like, he was like, man. I was like, how old was she? She was like 20-something, like 20-something. He's like, man, look, what kind of bread you want? Stale bread or fresh bread? Really, dog? That's your correlation? Whatever. But look, we got to bow out. We got to bow out because we got to make room for our guests coming up. And we want to make sure that you all give them your full attention and you're clear about what's going on out here in the atmosphere. So let us step away as we welcome our guests to the show. Good afternoon, family. Good afternoon. So here we are with our guests, and we've been waiting to get Miss Jackson on with us for some time. Good morning. Good afternoon, Miss Jackson. Good afternoon, Miss Jackson. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm fine. Thank you. Can you hear me okay? Oh, yes, we can hear you fantastic.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So in the middle of this coronavirus epidemic, pandemic, you are in a number of ways, and I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm just thinking of the irony of it. You are literally at the eye of the storm. You are a mortician in the city of New York City proper. So please don't get it twisted. We're not talking about Canada. And if you're from New York, then you know anything out of the barrels is Canada. We're actually talking
That's
about
right.
New York City. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So don't get it twisted. Mm-hmm. You know, people be calling me, I'm from Syracuse. I'm from Albany. Yeah, that's Canada. Like, we don't even. But anyhow, that's we're not getting into that right now. You know what I'm saying? Like, what are you saying? That's not New York. Like, whatever. But anyhow, so you said something to me the other day as we were playing phone tag and stuff. You were like, yo, I'm trying to get an appointment to get into the cemeteries. Yo, that blew my mind. Like, what's going on?
It blew my mind, too. We are on a waiting list for the cemeteries and the crematories. So there are just so many deaths taking place per day that because of the coronavirus, that in addition to the deaths that would happen normally. So we are, as a death industry, overwhelmed. New York City has crematories in New York State, and our crematories go according to different laws. So they're only able to operate during certain hours. So that will start things to bottleneck, which is what we experienced. And it forced us as funeral directors to go into other places, either other states, and that's very time-consuming. And it's not that we don't want to give the time, it's just that time is of the essence. So a lot of these nursing homes that people are passing in, or if they pass in the house, there's no refrigeration. So the person has to be picked up immediately. So if this is happening at a ridiculous pace that we've never seen before, it just all becomes overwhelming for every aspect of the industry.
So I mean, I'm tracking with you, you know, because people die, and that's a normal occurrence, obviously. You know, you're born to die. But obviously, with the injection of this virus, it is ridiculous speed. You know, to utilize a Mel Brooks quote from Spaceballs, it is happening at a ridiculous speed right now. Now, I didn't think about that though. I mean, seriously, I don't know how many people have sat back and thought about such like the death industry. You know, from the embalmers to the handlers of bodies, because, you know, I don't even think, you know what, let me stop this. Tell me, because I'm privy, but I don't even think a lot of people understand, what happens to your personage when you die? So if you were to die at home, how do you come into that process? Again, because I don't think a lot of people understand that, you know, the body has to be claimed and yada, 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 yada. Like, cleanliness. I'm sorry. I'm going to shut up.
Be clear on the question. You mean if somebody dies at home, how does the funeral home come into it?
So if I die at home, what happens to me? Can you tell me the steps, what happens to me up until...
Yeah, it depends on the manner of death. And when I say that, meaning was it natural death
causes.
And the person being treated by a physician, and so this was somewhat expected to happen. We were on hospice care, in which case that's already set up ahead of time and anticipated. Is it a homicide? Is it a suicide? Was it an accident? So if it's those three, homicide, suicide, or accident, then the medical examiner would have, in normal times, would have to come into it.
Right.
And usually the body would go with the medical examiner, and they would have to do an autopsy. This is in the city of New York. The state of New York works a little differently outside of the five boroughs. But within the five boroughs, it would be taken to the medical examiner's office and an autopsy performed, and then those tests would take up to 120 days to come back in the results. But the burial and the funeral can take place, you know, within days after that autopsy takes place. So
let's just say natural causes.
Okay. So
let's just say natural causes.
just to finish that quick thought, the funeral home would then get the body from the medical examiner. Now, if it's natural causes, as we had discussed before, then the funeral home would be called. Once you in the city of New York, the police are called, even, you know, so the unless it's a hospice care. So if it's natural causes, it's cleared by the person's physician, meaning I saw them in the last couple of days or I last treated them and they're on this type of medication and the death is probably as a result of XYZ, then the once that is taken care of through a few phone calls, and that may take an hour or two, then the funeral home is usually allowed to come. And we can make the house removal.
Okay.
That's the term that we use. So then the person gets brought back to the funeral home, and they're prepared.
And see, I don't think most people are hip to that. I think most people think that when you pass, everybody, no matter what, you have to have an autopsy and, you know, some NCIS, CSI type shit. You know, you on the table and they looking at you like, measuring your skull, taking your temp, so on and so forth, versus like we just broke it down, like that's not always the case. I wanted people to be clear on that. Okay, so let's fast forward a little bit so everybody's clear. Rasha, you got that?
Yes, and I just wanted to say hello. I wanted to say hello to Miss Jackson. I actually didn't get a chance to speak to her. I wanted to thank her so much for her time and let you know, Miss Jackson, that I feel your stress and hesitancy, you know, in this moment because you're dealing with sometimes bodies that are still fully contagious. And probably your procedures or what you used to do have had to be modified or ramped up somehow in order to accommodate the fact that it isn't just a regular run-of-the-mill heart attack, but a hyper-virulent disease that you're dealing with. And so thank you so much for what you're doing for this country and for New York City and for, you know, Black people. I'm pretty sure you deal with quite a few of Black people, am I correct?
You are correct. We primarily deal with, we started out as a funeral home who primarily dealt with Black people and as a Black family. So we, as times have gone on, it's been interesting. Just like we've become a global community, I've served more people in varying cultures, maybe in the last 10 years, than our family had served previously.
Are you able to validate that statistic that more African Americans are falling victim to this virus than other nationalities or other ethnicities?
I would believe so. From the number of calls, I get I don't even know what the number is. I can't say quadruple. What's double that or triple that of the number of calls that I would normally get. So the variety that I'm getting a lot more of different cultures. But the cultures are still a bit limited to Black and Latino. Those are the ones that are approaching me. I have served, I get the occasional Cambodian family, the occasional Jewish family, and it's very rare, but they sometimes they will come to me. And once they have, then we sort of have a friendship, and then I tend to get their family after that.
And then but that's exactly how their businesses work amongst them. Let me ask you, Miss Jackson, can I call you Miss Margaret? I'm sorry.
Please call me Margaret. Call me Meg. Whatever you're comfortable with.
Listen, I know better than to talk crazy to my elders, Miss Margaret. I know better. But wait. Let me ask you something now. Are y'all talking to each other, the morticians, the death practitioners? Are y'all having conferences amongst each other so that you can notice trends when it comes to the death end of this virus?
Well, as far as, and I meant to finish the point, and thank you for bringing it around, but I do see a trend. We don't necessarily even have time to talk about it amongst each other. We just sort of quietly notice it ourselves. We're little statisticians on our own in some ways. What I was saying before, I am noticing it is hitting the Latino community. I have acquaintances in white funeral homes, and they are getting bombarded at the same level. It does not surprise me, though, that the numbers are coming up, that Blacks are being affected more, because somewhere in the 90s, being a part of a political club that our family, Martin Luther King Jr., Democrat in Harlem, we were told and were very aware of the fact that 18 to 20 hospitals have been closed in New York City, and that was back in the mid-90s. So, and at that point, they were complaining that the ERs were overwhelmed and people were using that as a primary physician. What I felt in my heart, don't know if it's true, is that the medical industry was starting to change and things were going to burgeon in a different direction, and urgent care did not exist in the 90s, and it's all over the place now. So they were going in a different direction. And by closing down these hospitals, they made a necessity. You needed to have the urgent care. So it seems like that's the plan that they played out, and it sort of worked out for them. Not necessarily for us, because we had a lag of about 20 years of not having health care that was accessible. We didn't have it great before, but there were more hospitals that at least we could go to. And because the physicians just weren't in our communities as they were in others. So I can see why now, 20 years later, what you do today happens, really, you see it play out tomorrow. And so that's what happened. They closed them down. There were a lot of, I'd like to see the numbers in Chicago, because I hear Chicago's having the same ridiculous numbers. So that's my answer to that.
And it's the congestion, too. When you have people piled on top of each other, you know, we breathing in each other's air that the other person just breathed out. And it just increases the chance of in fact, that's what was wrong in the origination of the virus itself. People just live too close to each other, and things happen.
On this planet, no one lives closer to each other than those in China and in India. So I am a little surprised that the state of New York is working on having, and the United States, who's got 300 and change million, versus people who have billions in their population, how do we have the highest numbers? That part doesn't make sense to me.
Because we don't pay attention. Because we didn't believe that
this
thing...
Just out of the sheer ability for the germ to spread. How, and in police, they have cage apartments that really are not even in China, that are not really divided by solid walls. So if somebody sneezes in one, you're going to get it in the other one. So I just don't understand how people, and you have that large a community, that it should spread like wildfire. We have more space in New York. We're on top of each other, but we got a little more space than some of those other communities. And you can't walk down some of those streets without being less than 2 feet next to somebody else. So none of this, that part does not make sense to me. The Indian numbers have come in under 5,000 so far as death, and China is holding somewhere around 4,000.
Well, as far as China is concerned, you know, those numbers, no one will ever know are true. No one will ever know anyone's numbers are true. Let's be clear on that. So, you know, let's dispel all that matters. No one will ever know anyone's numbers are true. I've gotten hits about, yo, you think the numbers are right? I think they're underreporting. I believe they're underreporting. And I say that because just yesterday I'm talking to an EMT person in the grocery store, and I was like, hey, man, you know, have you all's numbers spiked? And he's like, nope, actually they've gone down. I was like, huh? He said, yeah, man, everyone thinks that if they go to the hospital, they're going to get sick. So no one's trying to go to the hospital right now. So I think you have a lot of folks, and I've read this, I think, in the Times, or be it L.A. or New York, I can't remember, that a lot of folks are not being counted at number because they're dying at home from the disease, but they refuse to get treated. So because they're not at a hospital, the hospital didn't test them, the hospital didn't say that they have the coronavirus, then they're not getting counted in the numbers. You know what I'm saying? So
They're doing some other, I'm sorry to interrupt you. They're doing some other strange accounting for that. Meaning
it's a game.
The death certificates are being listed as possible COVID case if it's not a confirmed one.
Correct.
So
because
they're trying to still,
no one's
Can you you, no you one's can posthumously test someone, right?
You can, yes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can.
But
why would you?
At the
rate
that everything is going right now, I think that I don't know if they're trying to put the testing numbers now on the people who are living, because that hasn't.
There you go.
That's not really great. Now, I live in Co-op City, and they've set up finally a drive-in, a drive-through, testing site. And that's nice. But what about all the other black people that don't drive? So how are you going to be approaching that testing site? You can't.
Hmm. So, okay, I was going to say, and, you know, who wants to add to the panic that is going on right now? No one wants to add to that. Nobody. No one's trying to get it to the masses that this is really a problem. Hence, a huge issue with Trump. Had he started high and at this point started working his way back down, I think more people would have appreciated that. The fact that he started so low and now he's trying to ramp up, people are like, okay, so are you lying to me now or did you lie to me then? Because then you said this is just a game, it's going to blow over. Now all of a sudden you're saying shelter in place, stay at home, or you're going to die. Like that, come on, which way are we going right now? And that is detrimental to a whole lot of people, and it does a huge disservice to the masses. But I don't want to go too far with that because we have to keep this tight and right in order to make everything work today. You said you were on the waiting list. You mentioned that.
Yep, we are in the midst of a new normal, and new normal is we still need to approach healing throughout this experience, because that's what we don't want is to just, we want people to be able to grow through this, just like they would, because grief, when you're experiencing it, you grow through it, you get an education,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
about
mm-hmm.
yourself, about the world, about a bunch of stuff. And so this is another opportunity for us to grow and to learn from, and people who are grieving are learning how to do it in a different way. It's not the way that you did it 2 months ago. It's not the way that you did it years ago. And traditions are going to have to be reinvented. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that's going on. With our families, we're trying to not have them feel like you're being shuttled, like you're one more hamburger on the assembly line in McDonald's. We don't want you to feel like that, because in the midst of all of this craziness, you still have to feel. Yes, sir.
But speaking directly to that, the new normal and the fact that you want to deal with families and not make them feel like they are a hamburger on the assembly line. You spoke to dealing with other states. Had you done that in the past? Like, had you dealt with Connecticut or
not necessarily Connecticut, New Jersey. I mean, I've had funeral directors that I've hired from other states, because if the death occurs in another state, that's who has to do the death certificate, that's who has to, and all that stuff. So I'll have, as a New Yorker, if I'm going to handle the services, I still need you to pick them up in that state and file the paperwork there. But for crematories, I've usually only used New Jersey. I've always had a liaison with New Jersey because, you know, it's a poor rabbit that has one hole. So I need, I have a couple in New York State, but when they have to operate under those hours, it's a little more convenient for the ones in New Jersey that accommodate a funeral director's hours, because sometimes I can't really make it until 11 p.m. And they have somebody who's on staff who's working 24 hours, and they do shifts. They don't allow that in New York, or they didn't before now in New York. So if the family's going to accompany me, then we go to the New York one, because that's faster and traffic and all of that. If they're not going to accompany me to the crematory after the funeral, then I usually use the one in New Jersey.
So you said traffic.
To have a relationship with them.
So you said traffic. That's pretty non-existent right about now, though, right?
We're not having services. Like, I'm sorry, in previous times. Right now, we're really not having services like that. A lot of families are opting for direct burial or direct cremation, because you cannot gather with more than 10. A direct burial or direct cremation means that the person is picked up from where they passed, be it in the home or in a hospital, nursing home, and or if something has happened, they're going to be taken to the medical examiner, they're picked up from there. And they are directly taken, after the paperwork is filed with the city and the death certificate, they are taken to purchase. They are taken to the burial site or the crematory. The burial takes place, cremation takes place, and the death certificates and the cremains are returned to the family, and there's no one that accompanies. It's the funeral director. That's what that is.
Miss Margaret, I wanted to ask you, please, you guys have not encompassed the telecommunication where you have the service and the family can watch from somewhere else other than the the parlor?
We have encountered that, and we're just starting to be able to have services now. So we're going to be doing something like that actually tomorrow for the first time, because we haven't had a necessity for it in the past. So we can stream them, but people are feeling like they really want to be there. They want to gather. The complaints that people are having is even if we gather with 10 of us, there are 200 of us. And what makes me feel better at a service is having my family who I can hug, or somebody who I can hold their hands through so-and-so's favorite song, or whatever is going to happen. They want to gather. That's still the main desire for them. So it is possible, and we can. And you have the social distancing, but what you have when you have 10 people, the chairs are distanced. There is no hugging at the service. Whatever happens, everybody has to be distanced, you know, and we have to be really on time to get to the next level, which is either going to be the crematory or the cemetery. Because in these times, if you miss that time, there's no time to linger. Then you'll have to go back into the line, and you'll have to start it all over again. So as far as not being able to get in there. So it's a little tighter in that way, and people know that they're emotional at this time, and they're doing it the way that they feel. You know, at this time, it's by any means necessary, but still within reason,
right?
Because the law is really guiding us.
You told me that your staff has been affected by this.
Yep, I have people that don't necessarily work with me all of the time, but they come in when I actually, you know, when I get overloaded in normal days. One gentleman was affected because he had to go into quarantine because his wife had it, so that pulled him out of the game. And then another lady who would work with me on weekends, she contracted it, and so that helps in my administrative side of it when I get overwhelmed. So, and that's another part of it. I'm getting a lot of cases. That's great. But when do I get to process my paperwork? All hands are on deck to do things that we don't normally do. You know, there is no time for everybody to have their position. Everybody's just got to get in there and do things that they haven't done before. Me included.
Now, this is, speaking to that, this is your family business, right? Did you, you know, growing up, was this your dream?
No, I wanted to be an actor.
Or is this? Well, you know, I already knew that answer. But yeah, it's crazy. So like, when you decided to do it, what was that process like? Like being an actress and doing what you do right now are different.
It's a different
kind of spectrum, without a doubt.
Yeah,
I said spectrum. I didn't say it was a different frequency. That's why I said different. Right. Well, it's a costume if you want to think of it like that. Yeah, you know. Okay.
They have to be fitted. They have to look right. I have to have my clothes. I got to have my costume on. I can't wear sweats. So,
Right.
I like to be able to dress. I don't want to be, you know, look like Gravedigger Odell. But I like to bring a little style to it, my own style to it. But that's also me bringing my respect to the family, that I'm not coming heavy. I'm coming with the best that I got. But and I want your loved one to look like that too. But
okay,
it's a it's been a family business that's had a little bit that should be best, I guess, saved for my memoirs.
Okay,
that should be best saved for my memoirs. I basically, it is a long family fight, and we had to sort of go into court and get our family business back, my mother and I and all that other kind of stuff. So once we did, I grew up in the business, but being in it as an adult.
You was at the school like, I see dead people. Was you that one?
Well, no. You know what's so funny is that I was never really afraid of that, because I wasn't raised to be afraid of that. I wasn't raised that existed, that was a problem for me, because we had never had any proof that had happened. And if you ask my 10-year-old now, you know, what does mommy think about people getting up and moving and all that kind of stuff, and she would answer you that we're going to make millions of dollars. We'd be millionaires if we could figure out how to do that. So
right. That
it has never happened. So we just, it's just not a part of my belief system.
Gotcha.
That it would happen.
Gotcha.
I'd love for it to happen because, like I said, I would make millions of dollars. I would show everybody every day. We'd be doing this radio program every single, broadcasting six, seven times a day.
Look what I can do.
Oh, I got another one to move. But, so since that doesn't exist.
Are you taking, what precautions are you using, Ms. Margaret, to protect you and your family?
I thank you for asking that. Well, there's something with funeral directors that we call universal precaution. So it was before any of this ever happened. If you treat everybody like they've got the bubonic plague, and even if it is a heart attack, when you are dealing with people, you can't really catch it from. I did ask a medical examiner, not to be all over the place, but what is it that you do to protect yourself? And she said, you know, I've been doing this for a month now, and I have not gotten sick. So she's in her full protective gear, much like what you see with the nurses and the doctors on the news, with the face shield, the gown, the mask, and all that stuff. But a deceased person can't aerosolize anything, sneeze or spray anything at you, and that's where you would be able to transmit it. And formaldehyde kills it. That's another good thing. So that does help after the case. The problem is that the germ exists everywhere and on surfaces. So it could be the clothing that the person had on, and it could be, you know, whatever. That's where families may run into their problem.
Uh-huh.
Or something that may have been sneezed or coughed on. But for the most part, we wear our face masks, we wear our gloves, and you have to sanitize whatever you were wearing underneath, you know, your protective gown afterwards. And detergent and hot water actually kills that pretty well.
Okay. So we need some Tide. We need some
The germ is encapsulated in an envelope. And the envelope is inactivated when it's dissolved or broken down. And it's dissolved or broken down by soap. That's why they want you to wash your hands so often. So you may not be killing it, but you're inactivating it. So it's sort of like that Superman movie. I think it was the first one or the second one where they took the villains and they put them in that glass mirror thing and they spun them through space.
Oh, my goodness. That's a skewer.
that's basically what you're doing to the germ by washing your hands and using the soap. You are putting it in an inactivated state so it cannot harm you. You didn't kill it. It still can look at you and make faces at you, but it can't hurt you. Say it again.
Are you running into supply issues? Do you have all the shields?
Yes, I am running into supply issues. We're on back order for a lot of things, so I try to go to a bunch of different companies and get online there, which is making us spend a lot more money than we expected to, because I have to whoever's going to deliver to me first. But you got to put the order in. I'm noticing that crematories don't want COVID patients with just one body bag. In a cremation container, they want them in two body bags. So now you're eating through my supply, but now you're also making me go stand online with a bunch of other funeral directors who've had to do the same thing, and we're all getting our stuff at some point from China. That's who's manufacturing it. And it's the embalming fluids. If you're doing more direct cremations and burials, and we are doing more than we probably have in the past, you're running out of the embalming fluid, but not at the same rate.
You just made a real compelling argument. Are they doing the reach around, Ms. Margaret, making us sick so we can have to cash in on their products?
Doesn't it feel like it? I'm just saying.
Look, I want you to plug your business before we let you go, because we got Doc Cadigan on, and I need to get him up. But plug your business, please. Tell folks where you are and how to get in touch.
I do thank you for giving me an opportunity to share any information today. And my name is Margaret B. Jackson. Marcus Jackson Funeral Home is the name of our business. We're located at 2037A Utica Avenue in Brooklyn. Please, during this pandemic, do not see us. Just call us. Our telephone number is 24 hours, and it's 212-234-6602. If you need to send a text or a call, it will be received.
Brooklyn, stand up. You hear me? Never die. Fed's dying.
Okay. I live in the Bronx,
right,
so I serve throughout the city of New York. So it's never that's my work studio and my workspace. But I go to the family.
All on the other side of town. I serve the greater
New York City area. So whoever needs our services, you call us from wherever you are.
But she live in New Rochelle. She's talking about I live in the Bronx. Whatever. Anyhow.
No.
Thank you, Mother.
It's Co-op City, man.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you. Thank you, sister. You be good, okay?
I'll be careful.
And be safe. And be
all right,
safe.
You too.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Peace.
All right.
Peace.
Bye-bye.
Well, so we have Margaret on to talk about NYC. We got Doc on to talk about NOLA. Doc Cadigan, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing very well. How about yourselves today?
Please say hello to Rashi, my co-host Rashi. Please say hello to her.
Hello, Rashi.
Hello.
Dr. Kendoza. I'm doing very
doing,
well.
Doctor? All right. So how are you faring down there in NOLA, New Orleans?
Well, if you listen to the news reports there, we're being hit very hard by the coronavirus down here.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be have a predilection for black people, if you have to be specific. There seems to be more imbalance in the numbers that it's affecting. Same as a lot of other places, my home is Detroit, Michigan, and I was thinking of going home. But then I started looking at what they're saying about Detroit and knowing that the president doesn't want to even talk to the governor. So I thought that might not be the best move. So I'm obliged myself to staying right here in New Orleans.
So there's a brief story about how we connected. We connected over food, actually. I was in NOLA. And being the fat boy that I am, I decided to check out Sweet Soul Food, Sweet Vegan Soul in New Orleans. And Doc was sitting next to me. We struck up a conversation. And he told me that he wears many hats in New Orleans, not just as a foot doctor, because that's what he does, but he's also very active in mobility down there. He's driving for Uber and whatnot to fill up his time because, you know, he said the young lady's trying to chase him and he's trying to stay away from him best he can. And the only way he can do that is if he's working. So that, what's going on with that? Has that dried up a lot as well? Is the city pretty much dead or what?
Oh, this has absolutely killed the tourist business here in the city. I mean, you can drive by a hotel and you see absolutely no activity inside of the hotels. Most hotels have either some type of bar or restaurant inside of it, or there's one nearby. And so you go downtown and you see absolutely nothing. It's very, very, very sad. You can go into the French Quarter, and they have boarded up mostly all of the bars and restaurants. They're closed. There's no business being done. Even though the airport continues to have planes coming in and out, which you could used to make a good dollar there, but not now. You might wait for 4 or 5 hours for one plane, and so you know you can't make money that way. So it's dried up is an understatement. So right now I'm kind of not doing that, but the other hat that I was doing was also doing acting, and I heard the previous speaker talking about that she wanted to be an actor, and
she did.
I've done a lot of background acting since 2007. I've had auditions in in California, at Hollywood and New York. I didn't get it, but at least I got the audition. But so I was really, had really reopened my offices in New Orleans for podiatry, and now Corona has hit. So I don't know what the outlook will be when things open back up. Certainly, I do not expect anything to go back to as it used to be. I think we've seen America as the leader of the world. I think we're going to see that there's going to be a shift. And because and the strange thing and the sad part, I think that people, our own government leaders and people are going to be calling for it because they've seen how, I have to say, an authoritarian government such as China has, as far as we know, what they have told us, has effectively managed the corona outbreak there. And here, I think we may have more outbreak in the United States than any other country at this time. So I think things are going to be changed because, you know, when you look at how what's considered a recession and what's considered a depression, if you have 3 consecutive months of no growth and then you have another 3 consecutive no growth months, we're going to be in a depression. I have to say that because that's what it, that's what they, that's the model that they use to determine if we're in a recession or depression or whatever. And we're not doing anything. Nobody, I won't say no one is making money. People are making money, but the masses are not. And it's gonna. It looks like maybe 1/3 of the population may be unemployed. That's a lot of people. I think they gave the statistic of 6.6 people had applied for unemployment. Yeah, 6.6 million had applied for unemployment. That's a high number, and it's increasing. And it is increasing.
I wanted to ask you about, so you said you reopened your podiatry offices. Now, to Rashi's point and to her credit, excellent question that you asked of Margaret. Were you wearing a lot of PPE previous to COVID-19, better known as coronavirus, or no?
No. I was not wearing a mask. But when, as they began to make us aware, see, that's the whole thing. The mayor even said if she had been aware and made aware by the federal government, we would not have had a Mardi Gras here. And, you know, Mardi Gras here is a big thing. And people, the industry looks forward to that time of year. At the same time, and realistically looking at it, there were a lot of people that came from all over the country, and they went back home. And I think a great many people may have either gotten infected here or spread it from wherever they came from. I'm not trying to blame New Orleans Mardi Gras. Now, please don't understand me or misunderstand But obviously, that has to be considered a factor in the spread because people have gone, people come here from all over the world. And as a driver for Lyft and Uber, I've seen people from absolutely all over the world that's gotten into my vehicle. And so that has to be definitely a spread. Now, I never wore until it became more, or that there was a problem. I then began to, I didn't have to look for an N95 mask because I always wore one as a podiatrist. So I didn't have to look for one, but I took more precautions to spray down my vehicle with Lysol. The door handle.
You can buy Lysol?
Well, I've always had Lysol, and but you know what? You can still find Lysol because I've bought two cans. Where was I at? I think I bought it, not to give a plug for anybody, but I went to Wally World and I got two cans. But people don't look at the smaller places like the dollar stores and the Dollar
right.
General. They have water. Walgreens and CVS, they have water
mm-hmm.
and they had
mm-hmm.
Lysol and those type of things too. So
I don't want to go too far.
Okay.
I want to circle back for half a second because you said something about the mayor and Mayor Cantrell, this current seated mayor in the city of New Orleans. A lot of people were pissed at her because, you know, she had a fundraiser that was to run concurrent with Mardi Gras. And it really took her up until the last minute to call that off, which sparked a lot of folk indifference to the coronavirus warning. So I've been told from my sources on the ground. So my folk are telling me that, you know, she's saying out of one side of her head, we shouldn't do Mardi Gras. But on the other side of her head, her ball, her fundraiser was still on. So they were like, well, to hell with not doing Mardi Gras. If you're still going out here, if it's good for you, then obviously, you know, it ain't that bad, so we're going to do it. And I think that gave hope a false sense of security. And obviously, it's been detrimental to a lot of folks, you know, literally and figuratively detrimental to a lot of folks. And did you hear anything about that? Did you hear any backlash that she may have gotten?
Well, I can't say that I heard any real backlash. I can just reiterate what she stated, what I heard her state, and that was that she didn't get information concerning the coronavirus until late. Now, what late is, mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not privy to that information. But she said she
right.
didn't get information about it until late and that there wouldn't have been a Mardi Gras. Now, I heard her say mm-hmm. that in a newscast, but, you know, that's what I can
okay.
tell you about.
No problem, no problem. I just wanted to put that out there because, you know, I was, when we met, I was with a very good friend of mine. We've been friends for years. And I was talking to her. I was talking to a number of other folks that I know. And they were like, yo, you know, hell, why are we going to start Mardi Gras? And she's still doing this thing over here. If she really wanted to influence the choice around Mardi Gras, she should have come out strongly from the giddy up saying, hey, we going to shut down. I'm going to shut down my ball because this thing is coming. We also need to shut down Mardi Gras. And I think that would have, from their perspective, from what I got, I think that would have garnered more support and a better adherence to that stay away. Now, going back to what you said again, and the reason I want to go back because you put out a lot of great information, but I just want to tackle it from some other angles as I've sat here and I took my notes and stuff. So you were saying that a number of businesses have closed down in the quarter, obviously because the tourist industry is pretty much dead. Now, if you've ever been to New Orleans and you've ever been to the French Quarter, there are a lot of secondary/tertiary businesses in the quarter. They are young men that tap dance. You normally see them when you're over there by the CVS, that right there on Decatur. They're the artists right there in the square by the old mansion. The artists all form up over there by where the carriages are. You hop on those and you take your tours and stuff. And when I say artists, I mean the whole gamut of artists. They're instrument players, they're storytellers, they're painters, they're sculptors, they're the impressionist, if you will. You know, there's a guy that dresses up as a clown, and you know, you take pictures with him and all that type of stuff. I mean, it's all kinds of people. There's, in my mind, how do they get unemployment? How do they get, you know, a small business help? You know, how do these folks get help? Folks in your position, now, you know, obviously you have the clinic, so that's a different story. But if you were simply doing the, what do they call them now? When you're just doing the Uber and Grubhub, what do they call it? The gig culture. Right. If you were strictly gigging it, you know, and I'm pretty sure, well, do you talk to anybody else out there that's Ubering or Lyfting? And, you know, do you have relationships with those folks? Are they concerned? How do they get compensated? Like, what's that looking like for New Orleans?
That's a very good question that you posed. The gig workers, such as rideshare drivers, Uber and Lyft, they do have and did come out with, there is a fund. It's only $1,000 is a lot of money right about now. But they do have a fund that they did come out with. You're going to have to prove your residency ship where you live. They have one for the New Orleans area, and you have to provide things as a driver license or a bill and also a bank account. And that's where I think a lot of people may have difficulty is because if you're working on the street, it's a cash affair, and they may have difficulty proving it. And most people,
these folks always trying to do something to get you not to get their money.
Absolutely. So, you know, I keep hearing the president talking about he's going to give $2 trillion and it's going to go to the people. And I strongly disbelieve that's going to happen. I don't believe people are going to get the money that stimulus package that they passed or is passing, considering passing, is going to affect the people that really, really need it. They have SBA loans. I was talking to a friend of mine. They have a truck. They're Jamaicans, and so they have the Jamaican fare, the jerk chicken and the curry chicken and oxtails and the rice and peas, you know, for those of you that
now
are
you
not
making a brother
familiar
home.
With.
Now you making a brother home.
I was talking to him yesterday, and he was telling me that he was going to apply for the Small Business Association loan that he can get. But I'm concerned, you know, the rideshare, you can apply for unemployment, rideshare drivers, but now those others, the others, we'll just call them the others, it may be a little bit more difficult for them to get tap into the resources that are available because in some way you're going to have to prove income. And let's face it, when you're getting cash money, those sources may not be reported in your taxes. It's going to be a bit difficult. And there's a number of people...
Let's keep it real, Doc. They might not be. You know, goodness daggone well, ain't nobody putting that cash money in their sack. Come on now.
Well, I was trying to be polite.
Shit. I got those extra $10,000 over here that I never told y'all about, but I'm going to tell you now to get $1,000. Yeah, they ain't going to happen.
And that's true. We all know that's true. So it's going to be some difficulties for people trying to tap into that, to those resources. So the question is, what's going to happen?
I appreciate you spending it to that, because, and this is why when folks travel that know me, I tell them to call me. And I tell them to do that because I tend to not just go to the touristy spots. I tend to be amongst the people. And what you all don't see is when you leave the quarter, when you leave Canal and St. Charles and what's that, Royal and all that down there. See, I can name streets. See, this ain't no game right here. I know where I be. When you leave all that right there and you go back and you know, what's that street? I can't think of that street right now, but give me a second, it'll come to me. When you go back about 3 to 5 minutes outside of that area, when you hit Claiborne and you go to that right, yeah, dog, just keep the windows rolled up and keep make sure you got gas. It's not a game.
Well, you know
it
what?
Really is.
That's true, and then it's not true, because I'm going to tell you, as a driver, at 2 o'clock in the morning, there are a lot of other folks that I've seen that are out there. I've seen Miss Becky riding her bike at 2 o'clock in the morning. So since Katrina, there has been a shift. The former mayor, who is now in prison, he made a statement that New Orleans was going to stay a chocolate city, and that's not true. There's been quite a shift, and you see a lot of the other. And when you drive in back into those areas, there are homes that are being either newly built or reconstructed. That are being built, and the others are occupying those homes or buying those homes. You will see that. The others is, other than black.
I'll leave that alone. Well, look, we got seven minutes. So I want to bow this up. All right, so we know that you weren't wearing a lot of PPE before. However, we're coming back. Business is coming back. The economy has to start again, right? I don't think it's going to start again until mid-June, I'm just being honest. So mid-June, July, here we go. Mr. Williams calls you, says, "Hey, man, I've been needing to see you forever. I got this big old bunion on my foot. I need to make an appointment." You say, "Mr. Williams, hey, I've been waiting for your call. Come on in. I can see you Monday morning, 9 o'clock. Mr. Williams shows up to your building Monday morning, 8:45. He sits down. He signs the clipboard. He's like, "Okay, Doc, I'm here." What does that look like now for you? Does that look like some plexiglass maybe in your reception area? Does that look like now, "Hey, Mr. Williams, I appreciate you being here, but there's this box that you need to put such and such and such in before I allow you to go any further"? What does that look like now for you, you think?
That's a good question. And because I've noticed just going into well, that's a very good question, because I've noticed in some of the gas stations that I have frequented as a rideshare driver, have just what you said. They now, where you could speak directly to the person, they have plexiglass up in front of the cashiers. And also I noticed that some of them you couldn't, if cash a lottery ticket in. Some of them are refusing. All of the bathrooms are seemingly off limits because they say that they're sanitizing the bathrooms. I'm currently, as we speak, I'm at New Orleans Lakefront, which is that's an underrepresented area for tourists to go to. I love it. It's a place you can hang out all day. We got nothing else to do, so you can go there and you can work out. But they have restaurants there, but they're of course they're all closed. So you can still have a family outing at the lakefront, and there are a number of people out here. I'm not out here by myself. And although at one point, maybe about a week or two ago, they had to close the lakefront because the younger folks were not listening to social media.
Right. And I think the whole thing about this whole virus, sir, is that the reason why our numbers are like this is because America in general is hard-headed. And you sound like you're from a generation who knows how to come in. You know how to get under the desk when they say the bomb is coming. Y'all know how to plant a garden because the government can't be trusted. But what I want you to be able to close us
out I'd like to speak about that.
Is letting those children, letting people who can't heed, okay, the word know. Let them know what it means. Meant historically for you not to listen to your government. And at the end of that, thank you so much, sir, for your time.
Well, thank you for allowing me to come in and even speak. But yes, you're right. And I have always been an advocate of that. And that's how I met Lee. Alkalinity and eating properly and trying properly. And at least decreasing the meat, but part of the problem that we have, and I will tell you this, I have noted, and I tell everybody this on Facebook, that you need to alkalize your body, and you can do that. I'm a subscriber to Dr. Sevi, whether you know him or don't believe him or disbelieve him, but he is someone that has in my eyes, has garnered respect because he proved that he had healed people. And when they took him to court, they arrested him, and the judge challenged him to present a list of people of all the diseases that he's healed. And he came in with 77 different people for 77 diseases that he had healed, including HIV. So
I'm sorry, Bob. We only have a minute left. So okay. I really want you to plug your business, and then we got to go. We're gonna let you go. So, you know, tell the folks.
Okay.
Once this thing is over,
I like to say
how
one
to get
more
in touch
thing.
With you. Yes, sir.
Okay. I'd like to say one more thing before I go.
Yes, sir.
And that simply is that for the community, you can help to alkalize your body to make it resistant to bacteria, fungal infections, as well as viral infections simply by using baking soda. Baking soda, I use a teaspoon of baking soda and alkaline water. That's water that is greater than the one I drink is greater than 9 or 9.5 pH. And some people use lime and lemon to make regular water alkaline. And drinking that daily, I drink it a teaspoon of it, of the baking soda. I do it 1 to 3 times a day. And that's why I wasn't really worried about PE, the personal protective equipment, although I did wear a mask and sanitize my vehicle. Now you can get in contact with Dr. Cadogan if you need to, and I'm going to give you a direct number for me. It's 504-339-7636. What else can I do?
Brother, that's all the time we have, but I appreciate you, but we will bring you back.
You all right. When you
we'll
be safe,
glad
okay?
to. Oh,
all right,
you
Sandra,
too.
You all be safe. You all be good. Right, you got Sandra. You all be safe. You all be good. Until next time, we out. Peace.